This is a place of refuge from the pop culture. You'll find classy music and a classy atmosphere.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 31, Secrets and Lies and More Lies. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi, Tara Aranio.
Hello.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah.
Exactly. Welcome to episode 348,000 of season 5. We'll get into it in a second. But first, we want to let you know what is happening on our Patreon. Again with this episode 118, dropping November 4th. Let's watch Luke Perry in Criminal Minds.
Mm-hmm.
That is on Hulu. It is season 4, episode 3. It's called Minimal Loss. You can hear us talk all about that and 112 other Melrose and 902 related items on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. Your contributions on that make this podcast possible, both the Patreon version and this one. And if you want to come and hang out with us on the Patreon Discord, we would love it. You can give us suggestions for what to do for these mini episodes. Please join us. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. And we hope that we'll see you there.
Yeah, you said 112 others. I think you meant 117.
I did.
Numbers are hard.
There was a fingerprint on my glasses, and that looked 113. We've done more.
We have. Do more. We've done so many. And in addition to all of the numbered Again with This episodes, we've also done multiple dozens of Again With Them. That is our monthly recap digest of Jenny and Tori's podcast, 90210 OMG. And it's funny I should bring it up right now because the next one drops November 3rd. That will be covering all of the episodes of OMG that dropped in October. And that is an exclusive perk only for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. We implore you, do not attempt to listen to this podcast yourselves. No one is paying you to do it. This is what you pay us to do.
Exactly.
We are the sin eaters of this podcast. Please don't attempt to consume it yourself. It's not okay. It's barely okay for us to do it. But
it really isn't. But for you, we do it. We do it happily.
We do.
Please join us. See what we thought of it. Spoiler. We don't like it.
No, it's true. Patreon.com/againwiththis for all of that and so much more. Now, let's get into this episode, starting with our D scene. It's hardly a plot. Denise and Chelsea are somehow both still here. It's not until after the first commercial break that this episode even remembers that Matt exists and brings us to his place so we can hear him recapping recent events in Chelsea's life to Chelsea. She knows he is trying to do the right thing, but thinks that Denise is also. And with her back dramatically turned to him, soap style, Chelsea tells Matt how much it's helped her to be around his sincere efforts to get her through this hard time. And they hug. And that's literally it. That's all that happens with these two in this episode. Wow. I guess I'm not asking for more if it's not going to progress. And it's not. But still, like, just have someone talk about them off screen. It's fine. Too many characters. On to the C plot. Michael and Taylor's scheming has unintended consequences. Peter wakes up on the couch at the condo into what appears to be the aftermath of a violent skirmish, furniture disordered, picture askew, etc. Taylor is cowering in the corner behind an apparently fake plant, dress torn, asking Peter not to hurt her. He, of course, does not know what she's talking about, and when he gets up, she tells him to stay away, because if he hits her again, she'll call the cops. Obviously, we know he didn't, but given the other shit he's been doing lately, he's a little too quick to claim he would never hit her. So she starts spinning a tale about the crazy rage that he doesn't remember. She had never seen him like that before. And then he flexes his right hand, sees the bruises, and gasps that he doesn't remember any of that. He's sorry. She tells him to go upstairs and they'll talk about it in the morning. He wants to look at her bruise, but she does not want him to touch her. Very confused, he staggers toward the stairs. And again, as Sarah said in the last episode, this should not be played for laughs. And yet, when Taylor peeks around the corner, we see Michael has been at the side door this whole time, and he gives her a thumbs up for her performance. And it's funny. What he does with it is funny. It's wrong. It's terrible. Yeah. But he can't not be funny, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and the way that this sort of, I don't know, like lumps all cases of intimate partner violence into soapy scheming. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand that people are, you know, grownups mostly watching this and understand that it's a soap and it's not real, but it's right. just like they needed to pick a tone and not this one that they picked.
Yeah, I agree. At the practice, Michael apologizes for having been away all the previous night, as the writers hope we forget. It was several days ago that Jennifer told Megan about Michael kissing Taylor, and this is the first we have seen Megan and Michael together since then. His cover story was that he was stuck at the hospital, but she already called there and knows he wasn't. And he doubles down on the lie by getting defensive and claiming he was transferred to the ER for emergency surgery. Kimberly is dead, so can Megan please have some faith in the man she claims to love? Megan immediately backs off, and all it takes to pacify her is his suggestion that they have dinner out. Wow, he finally met the perfect woman slash doormat. They are kissing when Peter walks in, looking upset. In Peter's office, Michael asks what his problem is, and reluctantly, Peter asks if Michael has ever had blackouts. Only after overdoing it in college, Michael says. Peter seizes on this explanation. He does have a lot of problems and stress at the moment and has been self-medicating with scotch. But then Michael notices Peter's bruised hand. If Peter's having blackouts, Michael should run some tests, like an EEG. But Peter just thinks he needs to stop drinking and everything will be fine. And then Michael and Taylor are at Shooters. Michael trying to get Taylor hyped up for the idea of escalating their plans against Peter. She thinks they've done enough since Peter's being nice to her now. He's traded scotch for orange juice, but, and that's all that she wanted. Man.
Just keep David Silver away from it.
Thank you. Orange juice in the Starburst is so unwholesome.
It really never harbinges anything good.
Mm-mm. No, including in this episode and, later, by the way.
No,
but
and I have notes on that for sure. But why hasn't Peter remembered? Because maybe the writers don't, that he gave Taylor the Mickey for Nick.
Right. I mean, we know that at least some of them do because they mentioned it in the last episode.
Yeah, they mentioned it last time.
Yeah. This team was in a different room.
Yes, Jesus.
Anyway, Peter has not stopped forcing Taylor to be Beth, but she claims he's going to soon. What? Based on what?
Oh,
I don't know.
Okay.
Michael also doesn't believe that's true and says as soon as Peter gets his confidence back, he'll forget all of his promises. And Megan's at the bar watching this conversation happen, but instead of confronting them, she just looks aghast and leaves. And the next night, I guess Lisa Rinna forgot her lav mic because it's echoey as hell at the condo as she suggests that she and Peter go out to a movie. He has to go over some charts and plans to do so in the tub, apparently. Again, real out of character. He takes a swig of OJ and leaves, whereupon Michael comes out from a back room earlier than planned because he was pretty sure Taylor would get cold feet. She states that she's not doing this again, but then they hear a clunk upstairs, and from Michael's, again, hilarious face, we know he went ahead and dosed Peter's juice without telling Taylor, which Michael confirms as they arrive to see him passed out on the carpeted bathroom floor. Disgusting.
That is
grosser. Ooh.
So wrong.
Oh,
so wrong.
Anyway, speaking of wrong, Michael drags Peter out as Taylor looks regretful. And then the next morning, a kid is looking down on Peter, squinting into the sun from the ground under a jungle gym. Clip two.
Is he dead?
I don't know. Poke him with a stick.
No, you do it.
Are you all right, mister?
Someone poke him with a stick. Please.
I mean, I like, if only it were possible to like have sound on for this, to make a gif of this and then caption it, me and Tara discussing the episode. Discussing the writers, like, is he dead? I don't know. Poke him with a stick. Like, oh, Jesus. Unbelievable.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Anyway, Peter staggers to his feet, even more confused when he sees his car haphazardly parked at the edge of the playground. And Peter has not changed clothes before coming into Michael's office to tell him what Taylor claimed about his violent blackouts. He thought it was the booze until he blacked out again last night, totally sober. And when he went to the condo, Taylor had locked herself in the bathroom and was too scared to talk. Peter has independently arrived at the seizure explanation, and Michael says he'll do some tests. But no one can know about this, Peter says, and for some reason trusts known liar Michael when he promises to enforce doctor-patient confidentiality on this. And the next day, Michael presents Peter his fake findings of rage epilepsy as diagnosed by a very much not present neurologist. I guess this is Dr. Howard Steiny. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's not the guy we know, but anyway.
Dr. B. Plotz. There it is.
Dr. Abe Sent. Anyway.
Yes, gorgeous. There
Thank
it is.
You. Michael will prescribe meds, but Peter needs to lower his stress before he triggers another attack. He starts by taking the rest of the day off. And when he's gone, Michael smugly tells Megan she married a very smart doctor. She reminds him about the argument they had. She does trust him, especially with their history. Nothing's more important. And Michael's like, cool? So then she downshifts into whining that she barely ever sees him before midnight anymore. But they're on for dinner tonight, right? Totally. Oh, but he might get held up on rounds. But after that, he will get home and make this all up to her for sure. And she pretends to agree, but waits for him to leave to pick up a vase of flowers on her desk and chuck it at the office's front door. I'd love to say justice for Megan, but who cares about Megan, truly?
Yeah, seriously.
On to the B plot. Crises climax separately for former roomies Allison and Billy and their current partners. Billy, still seething and bruised, returns home from his meetup with Jim and shows Sam where Jim punched him. And Sam's reaction is curious. Clip 3.
What? Wait a minute. My father's not a deacon or anything, but he's not violent.
Well, you don't think I know whose fist slammed into my face?
Well, maybe you did something to provoke him. Maybe you said something.
Would you wake up? Your father isn't a victim of bad luck or some rotten class system or a lousy crab harvest, all right? He's a con. You understand? Okay? And he hates me. He's obsessed with you for some weird revenge reason that passes all understanding. He said right to my face, I'm not leaving town without her. You get it now?
I can't believe it.
Well, you better. And you better do something about her. I don't know what's going to happen to us.
Break up.
Yeah. Also,
it's time.
Yeah. But also, again, like, the line between what is and is not an abuse plot line is so blurry when she's like, maybe you did something to provoke him. Like, either come out with it or not, whatever's going on with these two or had gone on in the past, because this is just frustrating.
Yeah. And nobody in this plot is a good enough actor to hint at other depths. Like,
no,
everything just reads as creepy or wooden or I'm in a beauty pageant despite working in a grocery store. Like, I don't
or stupid
know what's going on or care. Mm-hmm. Get on with it.
Yeah. So the next morning, we're with Jake and Allison as he tells her about the latest with the Ojai place. He's several sentences in before he notices how cold she's acting. So she admits she's worried that Jake is giving up what he really wants in order to do what seems like the right thing. And he reminds her about her dream of taking a chance on the unknown. But then there's a knock at the door, and Colleen is there with David, not having called first. She promised herself she wouldn't pop in on him again, but David wanted to see Jake. Okay, you can still call. What the fuck?
Yeah.
It's not 1890. Anyway,
Jesus.
Turns out Colleen's very off-screen husband has left the family. Obviously, this visit does not improve Allison's mood, but even so, she could be a tiny bit friendlier to David, since none of this, including his existence, is his fault. Like, she's really being a bitch in a very out-of-character way.
Yeah.
Like, be a bitch to Colleen. That's fine. She's the one who showed up without calling. But anyway.
Yeah, that read to me as, like, hungover drunk Allison
more than being
a bitch Allison.
Perhaps. But she's not supposed to be drinking anymore. They poured the vodka down in the last episode. She's back on the wagon for a few hours in this episode. But anyway, Colleen notices how pissy Allison's being and apologizes to her before Allison leaves them all alone. Colleen works for a hotel chain that has an opening in Hawaii, so they're leaving Friday, but David doesn't want to move. And as Allison watches jealously from down the hall, rolling her eyes, Jake says that gives them 3 days together. Okay. Again, what the fuck is the LAPD doing? Jim is still living in the same hotel room he's been in this whole time since he left the apartment. What the fuck? Anyway, Sam is there.
Yeah, nobody is good at this in this plot line. Nobody.
No. So Sam's there to yell at him about recent events. He claims Billy started the physical fighting. Seems like maybe Billy should have told Sam about Jim's open threat to kidnap her before she went there alone, because it comes as a surprise to her when Jim says he'll leave town as soon as she is ready to go with him. Clip 4.
You don't think I broke out of prison and came 3,000 miles across the country just for a little visit, did you? Hey, sweetheart, you didn't mean to, but when you testified against me, you ruined my life. But now, we both get a chance to make up for the past. Now you get your things together, and we'll go to Mexico, and we'll leave all this behind.
You're serious, aren't you?
I sure as hell am. You changed my life. And now, I'm changing yours, but for the better.
Okay, so... Now, my theory is there had to have been an explicit incest storyline at some point that someone decided, A, it's too risky for Fox to air. B, we don't want to even pretend we're going to continue dealing with the fallout from this after Jim is gone. We don't want to write this into Sam's character and have to continue, like, making her be a character who has trauma because none of us is qualified.
Yeah, and because we also forgot that the same shit happened with Allison.
Right.
Just without the jailbreak.
Yep.
But, I mean, Billy did say, he said he's not leaving town without you.
Oh, okay.
So,
sorry.
She apparently thinks that she can talk her dad out of it, or right. The writers forgot that from two scenes ago. Like,
well, I forgot
too many
it,
characters,
so I guess...
too many episodes.
I take back my critique.
This is not a you problem. This is a there's too much going on for too long problem
yeah.
with the show.
They're tired. We're tired. It's tiring.
It is.
So then Sam's coming home telling a horrified Billy where she was and what happened. And I hate Billy, but other than the part where he should have gone to the cops as soon as Jim broke in the first time, he is making points while grabbing her arm, of course. Clip 5.
Look what you were doing to us.
I mean, keeping secrets from me. I don't know when or if you're ever coming home. I mean, I love you, honey, but...
But what? What, you found out what I really am? A white trash chick who's not good enough for you? Well, you're right. My father is a psycho convict, and when I'm not babbling on like some stupid twit, I'm lying to you all the time. Now the money and the police, and I'm ruining your life. All because of who I am. A nothing. A lying... Poor nothing. I'm sorry, Billy. I didn't mean to bring you into all this and bring all this ugliness with me. Maybe I should just go away with him.
What are you talking about? You're not going anywhere.
Everything you said was true. He said it straight to my face. Come on, Sam. We're going off to sunny Mexico. He's crazy, Billy. What am I supposed to do?
You're going to straighten all this out. We're going down to the police station tomorrow, and you're going to turn him in. Hey, look at me. There is nothing ugly about you.
Okay, do they think the police station is closed? Like, they're open all the time. It's the police station.
Yeah.
Go right now. Tomorrow? What?
Yeah, it's not the Department of Buildings. Just go.
Just go.
Call 911.
Anyway. Oh.
Go next door. I'm sure you haven't had your phone fixed because TV.
Mm. So Billy goes on, Sam is sunlight and sweetness and the best thing that ever happened to him. Oh, not lately, but okay. Mm-hmm. She makes him promise he will always be with her, and he does. Then it's the next day, and I guess Billy and Sam have gone to the police station precisely when it opened at 10:30 a.m. or whatever the hours are in this town. What the fuck?
Took a number like it's the deli, and they wanted half a pound of provolone.
Yeah. Jesus. Sam gives Detective Dude the address where Jim has been staying fucking finally and tells him where and when she had told Jim she would meet him for their trip to Mexico. Not to be on the cop's side, but, like, clip 6.
So, you met with Jim Riley after we had you in here and told you he was a fugitive. After we told you that any assistance you gave him, you could end up under arrest and prosecuted for aiding and abetting. Now, that makes you either not very bright or not very trustworthy.
Hey, come on. All right, give her a break. She's told you everything now, right? It's her father, for God's sakes.
Young man, I'd keep my mouth shut if I were you. I'm going to take a chance and believe you, Samantha. We'll go meet your dad instead of you. If you're being straight with us, everybody's problems might be over.
Just don't hurt him, okay?
I'm afraid that depends on your father. You two go home. We'll let you know how it goes.
Follow us on Twitter for the latest. I hate this plot so much. I hate everyone involved.
It's so idiotic. It really, truly. Oh my God. Anyway.
And Detective Baldo clearly thinks he's in the Doltie's Falcon. It's like, listen up, Sammy. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I know you think this is your big shot and maybe you were right, but dude, bring it down. No one cares.
Back at the complex, David and Jake are having a splash fight in the pool when Allison calls them in for dinner and listens as David says this, clip 7.
Yeah, this has been the most fun couple of days I can remember, in a row at least.
Yeah, it has been fun, hasn't it?
I just hope things don't change. I know things can't stay exactly the same, what with me moving to Hawaii and all.
Things aren't gonna change, Hawaii's not that far.
No, Dad, I wasn't born yesterday, it's like halfway to China. I guess I should have asked Tom. I mean, is it okay if I call you Dad?
Yeah, it's okay. It's perfect.
I mean, barf, but the kid is actually good.
He is good. He's a good actor.
Given the garbage, the kid's good.
He is. But Allison, you know, stands in the doorway looking dyspeptic. About this. The next morning, Jake and Allison run into each other in the courtyard. She went for breakfast groceries, but Jake has a bunch of errands and then is taking David to the zoo. Does she want to come? Her face at this is hilarious, how much she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
She claims she has things to do, about which Jake has no curiosity before going on his way. And inside, she pours some orange juice and some vodka. So that lasted one whole episode.
Mm-hmm. And then she stirs it with a spoon. Why? Why is orange juice being implicated in any of this? Just drink it straight from the bottle like you used to do the first time we did this.
Yes.
Like, what is with the stirring? It's not Tang.
I was going to say, is it like Metamucil? Yeah, no. And he's out. Like, if the orange juice is to cover that you're drinking in, like, he's gone for the day. Just like you said, just drink it straight from the bottle. Anyway, Allison is feeling good and loose as she staggers through the Bellage hallway to Colleen's room. Colleen has eyes, so she comments on Allison being a little looped. Allison confirms that she is, and why not? She's celebrating the bond between a man and his son and the joy of a family connecting again. Colleen knew it would be tough on Allison for her to come, but she thought it was important for David, and they're leaving in a couple of days. Clip 8.
I really don't want to mess things up between you and Jake.
Oh, no, of course not, because that would be mean. And you're nice, aren't you, Colleen? So, when Jake came to visit you in your little town, did he tell you what a bitch I was? That I push him one way and then the other? Go away, Jake. Come back, Jake.
No. He said he loved you.
Ah. But he was miserable, wasn't he? Come on, you can tell.
Sort of, but that was because you two were having problems.
No, I know why he was miserable. You don't. You don't know. So, tell me this. All those years ago, or now,
did you really want Jake out of your life? Allison, please. This really isn't helpful.
Tell me, Colleen. I need to know. It's just between us, I promise.
No, I didn't want to lose him. But I know he really loves you, and you love him. You're married. And I accept that, Allison. I honestly do.
Don't. accept anything at face value. Things change. Oh, and don't go running off to Hawaii. Not just yet.
I mean, nothing is less sincere than you're married and I accept it. Like, okay, that's not a normal thing to say unless you don't accept it. So,
no.
Sure.
I will miss Courtney Thorne Smith and especially Drunk Allison. She's so good.
And you're not mean. Yeah, she's great.
No, 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 no.
No, 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 no. So good. From here, all of these idiots cross over into the A-plot. We will see them there later on. And speaking of the A-plot, here it is. Amanda has bad luck at all her businesses. At D&D, Amanda's in the middle of congratulating Craig on his lawsuit triumph when he walks her straight to Sydney's desk and introduces her as the agency's new efficiency coordinator, Clip 9.
I'll be needing a meeting with you later today, Amanda, to go over some personnel changes.
Oh, no. No way in hell. Get this piece of overreaching garbage out of here right this minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. No can do. My position here is part of the settlement contract signed by Craig, a full partner, if I'm not mistaken. Am I Craig?
No, you're absolutely right. A legal and binding agreement.
I thought you knew better than to mess with me.
Well, she just moves on. They high five, and no one gets the chance to say, should both of you people who can't stay on top of insurance policies be in charge of the efficiency of anything?
Yeah.
Later, Amanda, with Kyle, runs a meeting about a campaign for the Upstairs Jazz Club. D&D is going to make sure this is the most successful new club this year. She sure is taking an interest in this client. A personal interest, you might say. Amanda's ready to wrap things up, but Craig says, Clip 10.
I'm sorry, but we haven't heard Sydney's opinion yet.
And we're not going to.
You know, I have to say, I don't see the cost effectiveness in this project. I mean, no offense, Kyle, but you don't have two nickels to rub together. I mean, how is D&D going to profit?
That's not your concern, Sydney.
She might have a point. You know, it'd be kind of a drag to do all this work and not have the capital to get it out.
I guarantee there's money, okay? Now, everyone, get going and get to work.
Just seems suspicious to me. I'd like to see some paperwork on my desk before we commit.
Everybody out now.
I mean, this isn't really efficiency experting, but I'll allow it.
No, it's just being a bitch. Yes. Also, we haven't heard Cindy's opinion yet. Like, just such a slush mouth. And they're like, whatever, it's episode 48. Let's just keep going.
Yeah, I didn't even
everybody
hear
out
Cindy.
Now.
I heard Cinny, but either Cindy. Way, it's not her name.
Yeah.
As everyone leaves, Kyle asks what made Amanda hire Sydney. I don't know, dude, you did, but Amanda doesn't feel like explaining, so she orders Kyle to get the club up and running and generating cash flow. Cool, see you in 2 years. But no one says that. They go on. Clip 11.
You know what? I know that you're still upset about Jennifer, whether you care to admit it or not, but she is staying on my couch because she's got no place else to go. Now, if you let her have Nick's place, then maybe you and
but
I can...
There is no you and I, you understand? But if you want to live next to the junior Mancini, that's fine. Just get me a filled-out lease and first and last month's rent. Now, unless you have any other favors to ask of me, I've got work to do.
Amanda.
What?
You would have made a hell of a Marine.
Ooh, the ultimate compliment.
I mean, I don't disagree. I would like to know why we haven't seen any convo between Kyle and Jennifer. Like, if she thinks they're back together and she's still staying there, is he sleeping at the restaurant? Does he go home with Mario? Are they fucking? What is happening?
Mm. Mm.
Because, I mean, she shows up like in the next sequence of scenes.
Yeah.
Behind the bar at Upstairs. There's too many people on the show.
Yeah,
too many.
It's too many characters. Mm-hmm. The next day, Sydney's in Craig's office ranting that there's something sketchy about the club. There must be a slush fund behind it somewhere, and Craig is letting Amanda rip him off. Craig says that going at Amanda head on never works. Sydney shouldn't make so many waves. She should both watch Amanda to learn from her and keep track of anything, I guess, anything else that seems suspicious, and then they can use that against Amanda when the time is right. I feel Sydney should point out that since Craig has never once gotten the better of Amanda, his advice is worth nothing, but she doesn't. And
yeah,
then he asks to kiss her. And they do, which of course is when Amanda sees them and Sydney sees her see them. So that's where they are at this point. And then we're at the stupid fucking club as Kyle and Amanda audition a band and then argue about it. Kyle's taste, Kyle's dream, Amanda's money, etc. He orders her not to hold her financial investment over him, and she condescendingly says they can go with whoever he wants. And he recaps the sequence of events from their nice time in the DR to her finding out about Jennifer staying with him, which you brought her up. We still have not seen her in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda denies that seeing Jennifer made her shut down on him. Kyle thinks Amanda's a control freak, which, true, and that is why they haven't boned yet. Amanda laughs him off, then challenges him to prove it, so he kisses her again, and she's clearly into it, but then smirks afterward that she didn't lose control at all before heading down to the street to catch her breath because, oh my God, you guys, she did lose control. She does love Kyle! And then it's the next night, and the club is open for business, and Jennifer, finally on camera, is tending bar, bringing martinis to Billy and Sam. Apparently, this is the first time the three of them are meeting, and after she's volunteered the information about her affair with Kyle, Billy wants to gossip about it, but Sam's preoccupied about Jim's imminent arrest, and Billy promises Sam did the right thing. Elsewhere, Kyle fishes for compliments from his new peer, Jake, who pronounces the place cool. Allison wanted to come, but she's come down with something. I just bet.
Russian flu.
Enter Amanda, fashionably laid, boobs in full effect, as you can see in the visual aids. Claw clip also,
wearing
sadly.
Wearing a fucking claw clip. God damn it.
Amanda and Kyle flirt about their kiss and her having changed her mind about the band since she first heard them. But then she sees Jennifer at the bar and Kyle disingenuously acts like this is no big deal. But Amanda says it's like he's advertising whom he's slept with. And now that will never include Amanda. And he accuses her of sounding like Taylor, but Amanda guesses she had good reason. And as they move in opposite directions, Jennifer silently rejoices. And then we're in the alley where Sydney and Jane tried to leave cash for Richard before Sam followed them there. It's that, like, something fashion. You can see the visual aids. It's so lazy, but fine. So the cops get a notice that a suspect has arrived. And everyone scrambles to the scene, but it's just some possibly unhoused guy named Fred. Another guy, whose name he doesn't know, told Fred to meet him there about a job. And while the cops argue about whether Sam set them up, the camera pans to Jim, watching from inside a tree behind a wall. And the detectives say they'll just ask Sam about this when they pick her up again. And then back at the club, Sydney's wandering over to chat with Amanda. Clip 12.
Nice club, Amanda.
Thank you. Go away.
You know, it's a good idea for you to diversify, I think. You're really losing the old Amanda touch, seems to me. I mean, there I am in your company criticizing your every move and you can't get rid of me. The old Amanda would have done something about it, but you can't, can you? Oh, that's right. You don't have Craig on your leash anymore. To make matters worse, he's on my side.
You are an idiot, aren't you? You think that because you jump in the sack with Craig, you're suddenly the all-powerful Oz. Your substitute, and a pretty pathetic one at that. Let me tell you, anytime I want that little weasel, I can have him.
You know, it is really sad to see the old lioness losing her teeth, sitting here getting sloshed, living in her dream world.
Watch and learn, little one.
So Sydney does watch as Amanda pulls Craig out of his conversation and onto the dance floor. He says he would choose Sydney over Amanda any day, but Sydney can't hear that. And when he sees Sydney slip out, he spins Amanda out of his arms, saying he's starting to think she really is evil. And Amanda laughs as Craig goes after Sydney. Kyle also looks perturbed by this display while Amanda grins evilly back at him. But as soon as he's also stomped off, Her face falls. Oh no, maybe the lioness really is losing her teeth. What shall happen with Amanda, the only character worth caring about in the finale? We'll have to wait and find out next week. For now, let us close up by naming our episode MVP. Sydney?
I guess.
You know, she's kind of on top of the world at the moment.
Yeah.
Or Jennifer.
Yeah, I think Jennifer. Plus, she was barely in this episode, so she's valuable as far as I'm concerned.
She's got two whole scenes to fuck shit up in.
Mm-hmm.
Least valuable player. The Los Angeles Police Department. Guys, get together.
Like, you could always assume we think that, but yes, Jesus Christ. Call the marshals and let them handle this. For oh my real. God. Next time on Again With This, breakdowns, breakups, and ironically, a quickie wedding and a high-speed chase as we finally bring this interminable season of television to a close while failing to do the same to Andrew Shue's mouth. You should pop a couple of Maalox in your mouth before peeping our visual aids. You can find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. We're on Twitter at AWT90210, or you can call or text us at 210-920-4699. And don't forget to check out our Patreon page. There's so much extra 90210 and Melrose content. It's at patreon.com/againwiththis. And you can hang out with us/your fellow listeners on our dedicated Discord. It's a snap to set up, and we would love to have you along. I'm Peter Poker, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host would have made a hell of a Marine. She's Tara Ariano. And there's nothing ugly about our producer, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Is he dead?